Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
From Lower Manhattan, the center of the financial world, this is Money Talking from WNYC. Good morning. I'm Jeff Greenfield. Joined today by our regular contributors, Joe Nocera of the New York Times and Rana Faruhar of Time Magazine. Well, happy anniversary, Dodd-Frank. The 2,300-page law that promised to reform the financial system turns two next week. How's it doing? Well, the first thing you need to know, surprising as it may seem, is that the vast majority of the rules have yet to be finalized. And when you look at what is in place, the question is it working? Well, despite the rules, there have been plenty of big bang stumbles, if not worse. Barclays admits to manipulating the key interest rate, the LIBOR. J.P. Morgan's mismanaged multi-billion-dollar trading loss. And just this week, another brokerage firm, PFG Best, there's an ironic name, filed for bankruptcy, and $215 million in customer money appears to be missing. So, Joe Nocera, if Dodd-Frank had been fully in place, say even a year ago, would it have prevented these types of snafus and scandals?
Probably not. Having said that, I think it does a lot of good. It creates a consumer protection bureau to help people understand their finances better and maybe their mortgages better. You know, it's going to regulate derivatives for the first time, which is really pretty important. There's a systemic risk regulator. But all of which would have prevented the last crisis, you know. And part of the problem with regulation too often is it's fighting the last war and not fighting the next war.
Well, Rana, that raises an interesting point. If Dodd-Frank could have done only so much, maybe not much, is it focusing on the wrong thing?
I don't think it's focusing on the wrong things. And I think particularly in its original format, it was meant to capture the spirit of Glass-Steagall, which is, of course, the 1930s regulation that split commercial and investment banking. And that's a very simple, elegant piece of legislation. The problem with Dodd-Frank now is that once the lobbyists get a hold of it, it looks like Swiss cheese. When things are complex, it allows for more loopholes, and that allows for tricky business on the part of bankers and lawyers.
So that raises the question, do we need another Glass-Steagall?
It would be nice to have something simpler than the complexity of Dodd-Frank. Glass-Steagall wasn't just simple, it was radical. It cut banks in half. It said the commercial is going to be protected by the government and the investment banks, you're on your own. Today, the interrelationships between banks and investment banks are so complex, so diverse, and so huge, it's hard to imagine a Glass-Steagall actually being able to work.
And Rana, that leads us back to Dodd-Frank or the idea of a reinvigorated Glass-Steagall. Do either of these give us promise to actually regulate the complex financial industry we have now?
Well, I agree with Joe that simplicity is all. That's what you want. And I think that smaller is better. And I think to the extent that you break up these very large, too-big-to-manage organizations, and that's a common thread in a lot of the institutions that get into problems. They're just too big to manage. People don't know what's going on from one end to the other. I think that's a good thing. And I think Glass-Steagall would do that. But you'd have to adapt Glass-Steagall for today. You can't just pick up a piece of legislation from the 1930s and make it work. But just as finance adapts and innovates, so should regulation.
Well, let's turn from the health of the financial system to something much closer, our health. We learned this week that that JetBlue airline pilot who screamed at passengers during a flight in March might have been suffering from sleep deprivation. Now, airlines are supposed to have really strict rules about this, rest period, so something broke down there. But it raises a broader question, which is how responsible should companies be when it comes to our health? Rana, we live in a 24/7 world. Your employer can reach you whenever he or she wants. Do we actually need rules to enforce time off to say to companies, enough already. You can't reach that person at 9 o'clock at night.
Well, as I'm habitually checking my BlackBerry, I would say yes. I wish that it was so. But, you know, I think that we would need labor unions, frankly, to be stronger for that to happen. That's not going to happen anytime soon. You do have certain companies taking the steps of putting, like, you know, sleeping pods in offices. I know Arianna Huffington's big on this. You see a lot of these sorts of sleeping rooms in Silicon Valley firms. But, frankly, I think it's a bit of a ploy to just keep you in the office longer. I would like to go to my own home and sleep. And on that note, I would just mention that, you know, I wish we worked more like Germans, because in Germany, if you're still there at 6 o'clock, they think there's something wrong with you. You haven't been productive enough during the 8 or 9 hours that you've been there.
That sounds like my kind of employer. But Joe, there is a study that just came out that says corporate workers send or receive about 100 emails a day. And this goes to the point that the 8-hour day seems to be a thing of the past. So I guess the question is, how much should companies have to take our health into account? I mean, should they have gyms? Should there be, like, broccoli on the lunch menu in the cafeteria?
You know, so much of this is cultural. We live in a world where people want to show how much they work, how hard they work, and employers want to take advantage of that. The classic example, in my view, is Steve Jobs. You know, when he was a young man, he led the team that gave us the first Macintosh computer. And, you know, it was 90 hours, 100 hours. People just slaved over it. And, you know, it wound up burning a lot of people out. And after that, Jobs said, well, you know, it's a marathon, not a sprint. And that's what I tell people. But in fact, he could never stop pushing people to the edge. And they never stopped going to the edge. It was just ingrained in the culture.
Finally, as always, we look ahead to next week. With me again, our regulars, Rana Faruhar of Time Magazine, Jonah Serra of The New York Times. Rana, what's blinking on the radar?
So I've been thinking a lot about the latest economic data that's coming out, which is as terrible as it has been for some time now, and how that's going to play into the election results. And historically, if you look back, when consumer confidence is as low as it is now, for decades, an incumbent has never won. But I think we may be at a tipping point. The latest polls show that Obama is about 7% ahead of Romney. And I think that that's because Americans look at Romney, and instead of feeling aspirational, which is what he's counting on, they just think, I can't be that guy. The system's broken. They feel that mobility is stalled and that they can't move ahead. And I think that that's going to be something that might actually work in the president's favor coming up to November.
Joe, your crystal ball is showing you what?
The Commodity Futures Trading Commission. I'm not kidding. They have been on a roll. They essentially broke the Barclays scandal. Then last week, they finally came up with incredibly complicated and difficult to wrestle to the ground derivatives regulation, first time in the nation's history that we're going to be regulating swaps and so on. And then just a few days ago, they sued PFG Best for the loss of their customer accounts. Possibly next week, they will be coming out with a new rule that holds executives of commodity brokerages accountable if customer accounts money is missing. Wouldn't that be a wonderful thing? I have come to think of the Commodity Futures Trading Commission, which only has 700 employees, as a little agency that could.
We will be watching those stories and all the week's financial news at wnyc.org/business. You can also take this program with you as a podcast available for free on iTunes. I'm Jeff Greenfield. This is Money Talking from WNYC. Thanks for listening.